Well, thank you for having me this morning. It is an honor and a pleasure to be here in this special place where I got hitched here. Right over there 10 years ago. It was great. You should have been there. Thank you also to the people who put the lectionary together this morning. Because they gave us the whole enchilada. What Nate just read here is Jesus summarizing the law of God. And he does it in a way that is both beautiful, that we hear it in their liturgy, but also a little daunting when you think about it. These Pharisees, these teachers of the law, are trying to trap Jesus. They're trying, you know, you ever been asked a question that's not really a question? They're trying to get him to implicate himself so that they can kind of pick apart his entire system, his teaching, his authority. They ask him which commandment in the law is the greatest, and he gives them this answer. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." His words are true. He's right. And we know this because we know what it's like to experience the opposite. Nick Lowe, the great new wave singer, songwriter, producer, has a song where he says, "There's nowhere to run from what lack of love has done." There's nowhere to run from what lack of love has done. Indeed, much of our suffering, much of the pain we experience can be traced, not all of it, much of it can be traced back to some failure of this commandment to be upheld. You see, you and I, even if we had the most amazing parents in the world, we have a happy marriage, we have a great community, we have a wonderful boss, we have still suffered from a lack of love. We've been poorly loved by people whose capacity to love is compromised simply by the fact that they're human beings. Or perhaps you're someone whose ability and desire to give love has been thwarted. It's been thwarted by circumstance. It's been thwarted by death. It's been thwarted by bad timing. You have got a lot of love to give, but you can't seem to find a willing target. Or maybe you find that you love too easily, but you love the wrong things. Or you just don't love the right things quite enough. Jesus' commandment is true. The world would be a lot better place, not just out there, not just on a global scale, but in your own house and in your own heart, if we could do a little bit better job at doing what he says. And yet, when you think about it, it's daunting. And why would I say that? Because have you ever tried to command someone to feel a certain way? It doesn't work. We try this all the time in our marriages or with our children. You need to be more grateful. Just see how that works out next time you tell your child that. It doesn't. We cannot force ourselves to love something that we don't. I wish we could. But this is usually what the world's wisdom amounts to, is shouting at us louder and louder, "You've got to love. You've got to love him or her or them or those people or these people or yourself." Gerhard Fürde, the great theologian, put it succinctly when he said, if we go up to someone on the street, grab them by the lapels and say, "Look here, you're supposed to love me." That person may admit that we're right, but it won't work. They're probably going to want to get as far away from you as humanly possible. That's awkward. It's an invasion of personal space. The results are likely going to be the opposite of what you have asked them to do. He said, maybe the invitation will impel a person to works of goodness, motions of love. But in the end, they will become irksome and will all too often lead to hate. The law, you see, can curse, but it cannot bless. In commanding love, law can only point helplessly to that which it cannot produce. Because Jesus here, remember, he's not just saying, you should summon up in yourself a germ of love for those that you have a hard time loving. No, he's saying comprehensively to love with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. Not just God, but your neighbor. And not just your neighbor, but yourself. Love, we know, is not simply an expression. It is a motivation. It is a feeling. I wish it weren't the case. But it can look, you know, any parent knows when their child is calling because they love them and want to check in, and when they're calling because they need something. The action's the same, but the motivation determines the moral currency or the emotional weight of the gesture. There's a wonderful, and of course, the more we look to our motivations to control them, it tends to backfire. There's a wonderful illustration of this in this great show on NBC right now called The Good Place. Maybe you've seen it. It's about a woman's, Kristen Bell, who, it's about the afterlife. She ends up in the good place even though she thinks it's a mistake. Because on Earth, she was not a philanthropist. She was not a servant. She was pretty much just sort of a lazy, self-indulgent social media addict. And it's very funny. It makes for a lot of humor. But they find out that she's a fraud. And when they find it out, they say, well, we want to keep you here because we like you. We've come to like you. But your point total, people are only here because they scored enough points in life to keep them here. So maybe we can work it so that if you're here and you're loving towards the people around you, you can up your score and we can make a case for you to stay. And so she goes and greets people outside of the local coffee shop. But her immediate response is, okay, I'm going to do nice things for every goober in this place until my point total is so high I can rub it in all their smug faces. The scorekeeper looks at his watch and says, I think you just lost 5 points. You get what I'm saying. It's like a husband pointing out the dishes he's done in order to leverage some gratitude from his wife. The second we harness our loving deeds for credit is the second they become less loving, less good. Our motivation becomes self-seeking rather than affectionate or altruistic. Well, as you know, today is this Tuesday marks the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. And the Reformation can help us when it comes to what Jesus instructs us today. You see, the reformers, Martin Luther in particular, he understood that God, or he recovered the insight from Augustine, that God speaks to us in two ways. He speaks to us through his law, but also through his gospel. What's the difference here? Well, writing in First Things last week, Philip Carey said that the law simply tells us what to do, but the gospel tells us what God has done. Telling us to obey the law of love does not help us do it from the depths of our heart. We need something more. The 18th century hymnist John Berridge puts it this way. Run, John, run, the law commands, yet finds me neither feet nor hands. But sweeter news the gospel brings, it bids me fly and lends me wings. Maybe this gospel can help us with the law of love. Maybe it's a totally different language altogether. How does it work? Well, let's consult the authorities, and by authorities I mean St. Fred of Rogers, he of the neighborhood. Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. He's a very wonderful, you know, I'm on a bit of a kick right now for Mr. Rogers. And someone had sent me that incredible, his speech he gave at the induction of the TV Hall of Fame about 10 years ago before he died. And he paraphrases Jesus's law here. He talks about the role of people in television being to serve their neighbor. That's why he kept talking about neighborhoods. He said to treat our neighbor at least as well as we treat ourselves and allow the spirit of service to inform everything we produce on television. But he doesn't just leave us there. He doesn't just preach the law. What he does next is he preaches the gospel. He unlocks the secret of love. When he looks at the audience and he asks them point blank, he says, who has been such a servant in your life? Think back to someone who loved you and wanted what was best for you. Someone who encouraged you. And then he gives them 10 seconds to actually do that. And the camera pans around and you see all these celebrities with tears running down their faces. Because they're thinking about someone who loved them. You see, a gospel-centered view of the world understands that we are all severely handicapped in our ability to love one another, or at least love each other well. That we stand a much better chance of loving our neighbor or our spouse, and yes, even ourselves, when we aren't looking to them to do or be what they cannot do or be. Christian hope, and I might just say hope, lies not in having to generate love on our own steam, but in prior belovedness, what Mr. Rogers summoned for those celebrities that night. Prior belovedness, expressed not just in words, but in sacrificial terms, and in spite of undeserving. So what I might say to you this morning is that belovedness is the only engine of law-fulfilling love. I'll give you a glimpse of this, and then I'm finished. The book Tattoos on the Heart, some of you may have read, it came out a few years ago, it's by a Jesuit named Gregory Boyle, and it's about his adventures or his travails working in East L.A. In a very gang-ridden neighborhood as a Catholic priest. And he talks about, in Midway Through, he talks about one kid in particular, and the book is just a parade of incredible stories. But he said that he gives credit for most of his gray hairs to one kid named Speedy, who's a thrill seeker in the world of gang banging. But he doesn't mean that in a sort of admirable way. He said this kid basically had a death wish and would do one reckless thing after another. He just says one afternoon he was vesting for the 5 p.m. mass when Speedy entered the side door of the church, and he slid his two elbows on the countertop and said, "You know, Father Boyle, I don't really care if I live or die." Father Boyle looks at me and says, "Look, I have to do mass right now, so it's going to have to do for the moment for you to know that I care if you live or die." "Okay," he says, and gets out of the way. 3 hours later, Father Boyle's sitting at his desk when Speedy appears out of breath and his mood seems elevated. He says, "I'm not going to like what I'm about to tell you." Speedy says that he just walked Carla home, this girl that he was sweet on, but who lived in the midst of his worst enemies. Not the place he needs to be going. To walk her home was not just a bad idea, it was actually unconscionable, because it put both of their lives at serious risk. And so Father Boyle is enraged. He can't believe he would have done this to this girl and to himself. But Speedy steamrolls through the story. He says that he dropped her off at her second floor apartment. He's descending the stairs, and he encountered 8 members of this rival gang who are excited to see him because they want to hurt him. They throw whatever they can at him, rocks, sticks, empty bottles, but he eludes them because he's Speedy after all. He can run. As he nears First Street, sort of the border between the areas, he bumps into a woman named Yolanda, a woman who's active in the parish. She doesn't know Speedy well, but she knows him well enough to know that he should not be where he currently is. So she stops him and she says, "Speedy, if anything happened to you, it would break my heart in two." Again, she barely knows him. But she says, "I've seen you playing with your nephew in the park. What a good uncle you are. If anything happened to you, it would break my heart in two." Speedy runs from there to Father Boyle's office. Exactly immediately from this encounter with a nearly perfect stranger. And he says to Father Boyle, "You know, that made me feel good." Boyle writes that what could be tinier in the scope of human relations than the tender mercy of this stranger rubbing salve on the wounds of this kid's hopeless heart? But somehow it was enough. You could almost hear the armor fall away and clank to the ground. Come to find out, this interaction of this loving interaction when he's caught red-handed in the midst of undeserving was the beginning of the rest of this young man's life. Boyle goes on to say that he soon lived into this new way of seeing himself and the world, settling down with his girlfriend who had become his wife, producing 3 wonderful children, and largely avoiding the bombs that had gone off in his own life. Now, maybe you have a Yolanda in your life. Maybe you have someone you can think of who has loved you like that. Surprising, unnecessary, gracious love when you didn't deserve it. Stop you in your tracks. But maybe you haven't had one. Or maybe you haven't had one in a long time. But if you're in that place, in fact, wherever you are today, know that this is a small glimpse of how you have been loved and are loved by God. You see, this Christ, this Jesus, came not just to preach the law, but to fulfill it in himself. That is what that cross says to us every week, that he loves us so much that he submits to death. You see, the law commands that we love perfectly, but the gospel announces that we are perfectly loved. The Reformation is not ultimately about 95 theses nailed to a door. It is about one man nailed to a cross for you and for me. His devotion expressed not only in words, but in blood. Not just his heart broken, but his body as well. Maybe that gives you some small measure of silence this morning. Amen.
Amen.